Good morning, everyone. I'm Warit Ahmed, and I have with me
Abdul Majid.
And I hope you're all having a lovely, lovely morning today. How are you doing, Majid?
I'm good. Just to start things off, I just forgot that we have two events going on we have to talk about. One is Global Freight Summit, which is happening in Expo City today. Ryan Reynolds and Shah Rukh Khan are coming there. Also, Sania Mirza. Yesterday, it was a full pack house. Apart from that, there's a Dubai Future Foundation event that's happening.
At the Museum of the Future.
Museum of Future. It already kicked off, so we'll be going there. So you can go to our social media, especially Instagram, and see what's happening on the stories.
Yes. And for our first story today, so one of the world's favorite Brazilian stars, Neymar, has bought a Bugatti residence home with the real estate developer in the UAE, Bugatti.
Yeah.
Now, this is so exciting because it's showing that, you know, Dubai's luxury market is becoming so important internationally. Now, he, the residence that he purchased, it's actually, it's a luxury residence, and the official signing ceremony was executed earlier in Dubai by Bugatti's chief sales officer, Abdullah Bugatti, and the company's top executives.
Yeah. And the property is valued around $54 million, if I'm not wrong.
That's insane.
That's 200 million dirhams nearly. Mm. And also, Neymar recently also came. He was roaming around with Bugatti. And I guess he came to look at the house. They didn't reveal it then. But they also met in Riyadh. Neymar plays in the Saudi Pro League. Mm. He's injured nowadays. He's been out for 1 year. Recently, but he came back and then he got another injury and now he's out again. So apart from the sports part of his story, Neymar is a big player, a big name, and that means big people, all the big names from any industry, they're coming to Dubai, they're investing in the Dubai property. That shows that Dubai property is not a bubble, which everyone talks about. Dubai property is rising. And the way property will keep rising as far as we can see.
Yeah, no, for sure. And by the way, you know, like just recently, Majid, there was a press release that published that by the end of this year, the UAE is forecasted to receive 6,700 millionaires.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why the a lot of them are like investing in these luxury homes because the demand, even like just the demand in general for ready luxury homes, it's so high. Like, the press release also showed that there was this one villa, I forgot where it was, but I'm pretty sure it was in Dubai. Imagine, over the course of 2 years, to rent it, you needed 8.5 million dirhams. These numbers are so crazy. But just in general, just on the topic of Neymar in general, when I think of Neymar and, you know, how recently he's moved to Saudi Arabia and he's a part of Al Hilal, right?
Yeah.
I look at it like this, like all these football players, Majid, the way that they've all moved to Saudi Arabia with like Ronaldo starting the domino effect with Al Nasr, then you have Benzema in Al Ittihad, and now you have Neymar in Hilal. I think like when I like look at this topic, I really think that these football players are gonna like rattle the football sector in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, because
they're already doing it, and just the competition, it's insane. Like, I almost feel bad for the local players because when you have such global stars arriving in your country and in your own local teams, you have to play better. You have to do better.
Sort of inspiration as well, I guess, right? Obviously, they get overshadowed by these stars, but playing with them gives them an opportunity to become better.
For sure.
You play with Ronaldo, you see his work ethic, and you'll be like, okay, good idea, good person to follow, and live in flesh in front of me, in the gym with me. So they're good people to take inspiration from as well. And yes, the Saudi Pro League is doing good. The numbers say so. Stadiums are now starting to get filled in the last couple of years. People come to watch Ronaldo, Benzema, all the names that you took. They're all coming and they're watching the stars. And soon we'll see that eventually people will come not for the big global stars, for Saudi stars as well. And that has started happening. Saudi players are going here and there. They're getting contracts in other leagues. So it's becoming a good thing that now Saudi is also exporting football talent, and the money is eventually it's some sort of foreign direct investment. Mm. You train a player, he goes out. Obviously, whatever he earns will come back to Saudi in some way.
Yeah, but just to give those Saudi players just a bit more credit, you know, in the end of the day, Benzema, Neymar, Ronaldo, it's the end of their career.
Yes.
You know, them moving to Saudi Arabia, that is, you know, a sign of that, like a very big sign. This is the end of their career. So, you know, they're going to move somewhere else where that expertise, you know, although it's old now, that expertise, it can still be used to, you know, be a part of the larger plan of diversifying Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
You know, just to give them credit, because these players, you know, they have had their time. They have had their prime time. And for our second topic today, rent prices in Ras Al Khaimah have gone up. And essentially, homeowners reported to the national news that their property prices for homes that they originally bought like 2 years ago, they went up from $200,000 to $700,000. Now, I know you're asking, why is this happening? What's driving this up?
It's very clear. It's a very simple answer. The Wynn Marjan Island, where they're developing a Wynn resort and it has a casino. It's the first gaming area where you will be able to do gaming. Gaming is the official term being used by the regulatory body, which is regulating all of this, and the UAE regulatory body. So gaming wise, it's going to attract everyone. And the biggest, I think, people who will get attracted and come will be foreigners. Because we remember the report that they published about Wynn Marjan Island. the Wynn guys, they said that the gaming area of this casino will be bigger than the Las Vegas property. It's going to be smaller than the Singapore one, but it's going to be bigger than the Las Vegas property, like the percentage of the whole covered area. So it's a good sign. The property market is raising. We got so many big numbers on the post itself. There's like so many shares, and all the stories that we saw, mostly the property people, they were sharing the news that, let's invest. I can help you invest. So yeah, Ras Al Khaimah is booming, to be honest. In the next 2-3 years, Wynn is supposed to open in 2027.
Yeah.
And they have a like initial plan on opening the property just to like invite guests or see what's happening by 2026 mid. But the official complete opening, they've said, is by 2027 when everything will be open.
But you know, Majid, I believe what's so advantageous about this entire project, it's that, you know, it's creating more jobs for people in Iraq. This project alone is predicted to create around 4,000 jobs for people in Ras Al Khaimah.
Yeah.
And I believe it's going to offer more than 1,500 residences. However, in this project, there's just one flaw. I mean, I know that it's the UAE's, you know, first casino that is set to open, but not everybody is actually happy about that. Like, if we just take a look at the comment section, let me just tell you guys what everyone had to say about this. Some people were extremely excited about it. And then some people had to say that Dubai is becoming westernized slowly and that I believe, casino gambling, it is really bad, and whoever authorizes this is not a man of faith. Being a Muslim, you should know better than everyone.
Yeah. Apart from that, a lot of people are also saying there's more comments that they're delaying the inauguration, and this will give rise to more rental properties. See, the question here is that it's very simple. The regulatory body has approved it. They must have seen something, and it's not, it's commercial gaming. It's not exactly what they're saying it is. It's not gambling. It's commercial gaming. It'll be highly regulated. So,
I mean, it is gambling, but legalized gambling.
It's not even legalized gambling. The official term that is being used is commercial gaming, to be honest. Mm. And we should also use that term, to be honest. Commercial gaming is the word that they're using. And they're not calling it a casino. It's a gaming body, a gaming place, game. All these words are being used. So this is the language that the UAE government is using. And obviously, they must have seen something. They must have created a system around. Obviously, when the casino opens and everything opens, then we'll see the real picture that how everything takes place. But right now, the regulatory body's approval process, You know UAE. They don't just give anything to anyone. This is the first ever casino license, gaming license, not casino license, a gaming license provided by UAE. So it's not a small step that they would have taken just randomly for gambling. They would have assessed all the possibilities and then they would have gone about it. And there is a chance that there will be a second gaming thing which may happen in Abu Dhabi. MGM Resorts, which is a very big resort company, like resort establishment as well, they are opening a resort in Abu Dhabi. And the owner said that, actually not the owner, it's not an owner type of thing, it's a CEO. The CEO said that they've applied for Abu Dhabi gaming license. So we won't see only this. We may see a lot of establishments like this, gaming establishments open.
I definitely think we're going to see that because, you know, that is all a huge part of globalization. But Majid, I don't think that, you know, the official term being commercial gaming takes away from the, you know, the religious concerns that people have about the casino. I personally think that if you have a religious concern, the same way that I do, I would never go to a casino. I would never go somewhere where people gamble. That's just my personal belief. But I would stay away from something like that. But them naming it commercial gaming, it doesn't take away from what it actually is. But it will be a hit. It will be a success because
actually,
we know that...
to be honest, we can't comment on UAE's regulations. It's their regulations. The government created it. We shouldn't actually comment on it. They called it commercial gaming. We can call it commercial gaming. We can't call it gambling because officially, by law, by rule, by regulations, they've called it commercial gaming. So if we term it gambling, it will be wrong because the government says so. It's commercial gaming. That's one thing. Apart from that, I'll give you a very simple example. A lot of people say that alcohol is there in the UAE, but there's like very, very, very strict regulations. So it's not like that people are just going out and being drunk on the road and lying down. Alcohol is allowed because a lot of expats here who live and work here, they're not Muslims, they drink alcohol. So it's very highly regulated. So even with this casino, it'll be very highly regulated. So any misuse of the system in place, the commercial gaming system and regulations, you know the UAE government, they'll catch them and they won't take a second before shutting it down. So it's a very highly regulated commercial gaming environment that they're creating, not betting or gambling. It's called commercial gaming. So let's just stick to the word that they use, I guess.
And
people will always have concerns, to be honest.
I see what you mean. And I think their concerns are completely justifiable, but their concerns will not take away. They're justifiable, but they won't take away from the fact that, you know, Dubai, like, just my point of that the diversity pool here is so large and that, you know, commercial gaming resorts like this, they provide for every kind of individual that lives in the UAE. And that's, I guess, the beauty in it all. Because in the end of the day that, you know, even if you're like a religious person, I'm a Muslim Majid, every single road in the UAE, I find a masjid. There is a masjid built in every single road. If I want to pray, by the way, I'll be out with my friends and suddenly I'm like, I need to pray. I'm not even joking, Majid. I look to the right or I look to the left and there's a masjid.
Yeah.
So the UAE...
And even in Sharjah, it's more. Like
in
Dubai,
it's amazing.
The frequency of finding a mosque is lesser than Sharjah. It's like, I call it a city of mosque and the beauty of them. Really great. Yeah, but simple,
they accommodate
very simple
to
words.
Every person.
UAE creates an environment or an industry or everything, but it's a very clear signal from them. If you think it's wrong, don't go.
For sure. And simple. And just back on the...
If you don't like to drink, don't go. If you don't like to do commercial gaming, don't go.
I agree
it's
with
just
you.
For people who actually don't believe that it's wrong, and alcohol is not wrong for people who drink it. In their religion, they're allowed maybe. So... it's just that they put something in place, they highly regulate it, and then it's the will of the people. So if someone thinks it's wrong, don't go.
You're right about that.
Simplest
and just,
of explanations.
Back on the topic of Ras Al Khaimah, just very recently, Expat Insider 2024 survey by InterNations actually released that Ras Al Khaimah ranked as the world's best city for expats starting abroad. And it was actually leading the race with Dubai and Abu Dhabi behind it, I believe in second and third place.
Yeah.
And just all of this in general, Majid, it's so beautiful to finally see Ras Al Khaimah, you know, receiving the credit and the value that it deserves. Like, as a city, it's booming. And what the survey showed is that in Ras Al Khaimah, it's actually very easy for people to settle in.
Yeah.
It's very easy for them to find a home, you know, accessibility. And a lot of the subjects of the survey also said that them not knowing Arabic did not hinder anything for them whatsoever. So just generally, we're seeing that Ras Al Khaimah, it's climbing up there. It's definitely getting up there.
Yeah.
And it's going to be very important.
The ruler of Ras Al Khaimah is one of my favorite, like all of the seven are
really?
My favorite. Yeah, but I've heard him speak a lot of times, like live in audience as well. So I love the person, His Highness Sheikh Saud bin Sakr Al Qasmi. I was just Googling his full name so I can say it completely and properly. But he's a very nicely read person. Whenever I see him speak, he's speaking from the heart. I've sometimes often seen him without the paper. He would just come and speak. So he's very nicely well-read
person.
Where was
this?
Last year, AIM conference, the annual investment meeting in Abu Dhabi. That was like the first time I heard him live. And he's great. The idea of him creating Ras Al Khaimah into a not only a rack, we would have seen rack ceramics on the road, right? So he just wants to move it away from that towards tourism. Obviously, diversification is also important for Ras Al Khaimah. They can't sit on their minerals and all that. So for them, it's tourism. And rack resorts are the greatest. I went to one recently. And I had the view of the Wynn Casino right in front of me. And they were working day and night. Yeah. In the night, you see the Wynn whole project, and it's majestic, to be honest, in the night, the lights and everything, and they're working 24/7, so they will complete it by time. And Ras Al Khaimah obviously is bearing fruit of this development. Rents had to rise, the property prices had to rise.
Of course,
the closer you are to the property, this property, the more, right? I guess if you buy it for 1 million right now, after the casino and the whole resort is open, and it's not just Wynn Resort, a lot of other places will eventually open. And Marjan Island is really beautiful, so it's the perfect place.
I think the smartest people in Ras Al Khaimah are the ones who bought a home 2 to 3 years ago.
Yeah.
They are so smart, because imagine the value of your home increasing by $500,000. That is insane. That would make me extremely happy.
We also hosted Mr. Kalpesh Kinari Wala too.
Yeah.
Yesterday, actually.
Yeah.
And they're also developing like
real estate
a full mixed-use building, one central. And so, that's also happening. So a lot of people who are well-established in Dubai, they have their projects here. And are only Dubai-based, they're choosing Ras Al Khaimah as the next destination, not Abu Dhabi or Sharjah.
Yeah.
So that's happening as well. So yeah, good things coming for Ras Al Khaimah, to be honest. The Emirate has always been overshadowed by Dubai, Abu Dhabi, sometimes Sharjah as well.
But you know what?
But it's a good thing.
I don't believe it being overshadowed is necessarily a bad thing. I love that places like Ajman and Ras Al Khaimah are hidden gems.
Yeah.
And Fujairah. I love that so much because, like, you know, just recently my family went to Fujairah, Majid, and like on the Google map, it was saying that the road was going to be so busy. Like, the road was going to be filled with people, and everyone was a bit irritated because it was like, this is holiday. We don't want, you know, we don't want the hustle and bustle. We don't want any of that energy. But imagine, we arrived to the road. There were like four people. Imagine that. And it's and I think that's what makes these cities so beautiful. You always need that hidden gem, that place you can just get away to. And I think that's what Rack represents to a lot of people. Because even when I was doing just research on Ras Al Khaimah, a lot of its homeowners, they seem so connected with the greenery. Do you know what I mean? Like, even their personalities, they seem so connected with the green side of Rack. And but me personally, Majid, when it comes to living somewhere, I like to, how do I explain this? I like to live in like a suburban area, but on the outskirts of the city. So I still like to be close to the city, not too far. What about you?
Yeah, obviously. I'll prefer wherever the rent is cheap. I see the economics of it. Wherever the rent is cheaper and I get a good house, I will live there. The problem with these, that the suburban community that you're talking about, they're also getting expensive in Dubai.
Yeah.
Because everyone is moving out, right? Mm. The center has become so expensive, everyone is moving out, so those properties are rising. So we see a lot of people traveling from Sharjah, from Ajman, from Umm Al Quwain, coming to Dubai and going to Abu Dhabi to work. So yeah, I guess one of the things that I see in the future which will help this is the Etihad Rail, which has to grow through all the... So it might create an environment where people will start taking that, because again, clear track, quickly reach your target place and all of that.
Transportation is definitely a concern because, like, for example, where I live, Majid, imagine just recently, this summer, we got the RTA.
Oh.
It's Damak Hills. Just recently, we got the RTA.
Damak Hills 2, right?
Yeah, Damak Hills 2. Just recently, we got... And even the RTA bus stop, by the way, is a long walk from my home. It's a long... Like, I don't like taking it simply because of... I know it's winter now, but it's still slightly hot. But I think a concern with definitely all of these projects that are upcoming, it's transportation. Because, of course, the RTA is so helpful, but nothing beats the metro. And I think that when everybody in Dubai can have access to the metro, the country, its people are going to be winning to like a next level. And finally, for our third topic today, we're going to be talking about how UAE-born Pure Harvest is on track for an IPO by 2028. So Pure Harvest right now, they're actually planning to expand their operations into the USA's Sunbelt, Mexico regions, offering optimal conditions for controlled environment agricultural. Essentially, what the company is trying to do is that they're trying to pursue short-term farming initiatives in Morocco and Singapore. So they're basically trying to leverage local advantages for sustainable food production. And their IPO, it's actually going to be a $100 million fundraising round.
Yeah.
Now, you know, just this entire topic completely, your harvest, whenever... You know, maybe call me emotional for that, Majid, but whenever I see anything that has to do with greenery, with food, with harvest, I get so emotional because to me, that's ni'mah.
Yeah.
You know, ni'mah, to those of you who don't know Arabic, ni'mah means blessing. And it's just seeing people who go out of their way to, you know, create such sustainable agricultural, it will never not be a beautiful portrayal of ni'mah to me. But Majid is now going to tell you guys why this project really matters.
Most important thing is it's a UAE-born project. Sky Kurtz, the founder, he's... I remember one of his famous lines that I will never forget. Everything is a unicorn in the startup world, that if you go to 1 billion evaluation, you're a unicorn. And he said, I'm trying to build a unicamel. So it's a very nice play.
Wait, trying to build a what?
Unicamel. So whenever a startup reaches a $1 billion evaluation, they call it a unicorn. It becomes a from a startup to a unicorn. He says, I want to build a unicamel because he loves the region and he started his business in the region, in the UAE. And basically, he's using technology from here and there and then growing tomatoes. That was the first thing that they grew. But now they're growing a lot of other vegetables. So the important part is that a UAE-born startup is going for an IPO. They're planning it by 2027-28. He said 27-28, so we're saying by 2028. That's like the last year that they're thinking of going towards it. Mainly the thing that is happening right now is their $100 million funding. And he said that as soon as we get that funding, we'll go for an IPO. So let's see. It's just very good to see something starting from scratch. The
for
idea.
Sure.
In the desert, he's doing all the way. They just launched their, randomly came to mind, they just launched their tomato sauces, or, and they're made from their own tomatoes. So, yes, just happy to see a UAE startup in this field growing back.
For sure, expanding into the American sphere. But, you know, Majid, something that I noticed with all entrepreneurs who are involved with companies that have to do with anything green, I've really noticed this, by the way. When they have a company that's targeted at anything green, they usually care about the purpose a lot. They really, really care. And I don't just see this example in UAE born Pure Harvest, but there's this company, it's called Mahaya's Garden. And what they do is that it's a startup company, she produces soil. And I've actually met her before. She produces some of the best soil in the UAE. And I've met her and I spoke to her. And I was like, you know, like, is this your main job? And she was like, no. She's a consultant. She was a consultant for Accenture. And now I believe she moved on to work in tech. But she told me that during the day, she'd work in consultancy. And during the night, like, this was her project, Mahaya's Garden. And she even showed me her Queen Bee's certificate. It was hilarious. But with something that I noticed with these people who they care about anything green, they really care about it. For somebody to build a business that is solely around, you know, sustainable practices, creating sustainable food production, they always really care. They always really care. And the reason why I feel, you know, I really want to spotlight this is because we see nowadays nobody cares about climate change. They really, really don't. So when you find these like very rare individuals from like, you know, UAE Borns, Pure Harvest, Mahaya's Garden, I think these are entrepreneurs that the world really has to hold on to combat climate change. But just on, you know, Mahaya's Garden, you know what she does, Majid? She actually provides tomatoes to some of the UAE's top Michelin restaurants.
Nice. Yeah.
So, but her story, what I find so inspiring about it is that it really just stems from her spending her free time doing this, which really goes to show that anybody involved with any green entrepreneurship, they always care about it. They always have to be 100% in, because if they're not 100% in, it doesn't even come about whatsoever.
Yeah. Mainly, the thing that I caught from your whole story is that she's doing it as a hobby, right?
Yeah.
And hobbies usually you do from the heart. Mm. You usually care about those. And these startups, again, I always feel if you don't care enough, you're not really able to scale a startup. That's the most important thing. You need to be determined. Mm. And she looks determined, like working a full-time job and then doing this.
Yeah.
Very important if you want to be an entrepreneur, because you can't just leave your 9-to-5 and just start something. You have to, like, in the start, I guess, sometimes you have to manage both, because you get a consistent income and you put it in your hobby or the business or the idea that you're trying to create.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But you know, Majid, I just recently I spoke to a business owner, and her business, by the way, it's booming. She's doing completely well, but she's actually chasing after doing a 9-to-5 consultancy job. And I asked her, and I'm like, why do you want to do this? You've already succeeded. You've built a successful empire. Why do you want to work 9-to-5? Imagine her business is actually successful. It's actually big. I won't reveal who she is, but she's chasing after a 9-to-5 job. And I asked her, I'm like, why are you doing this? Like, why? And she works 24/7, by the way. And you know what she told me? She told me that right now, her business is in the process of scaling internationally. And for it to scale internationally, obviously, it's going to need more funds. And she told me that the purpose of me working 9-to-5 is so that I don't have to take a salary from my business anymore. All the money that we make, we can put back into just the profit of the business. You know, the business can keep growing without me taking any money out from it. And I want to be able to, she told me that she wants to be able to finance herself by working a 9-to-5 instead of, you know, taking money out of the business. You know, she just wants to keep the money cycling to scale her business. So that's what's so interesting. I don't always think it, you know, it comes out of the fact that it's people's hobbies, but that's why 9-to-5, it's never going to go out of order. Yeah. People will continue to work it. But yeah,
people will always need a job. But with entrepreneurs, I guess, whenever you hear any suggestion, it's like never leave your job, like on the idea phase. Just start it. And then maybe if you see potential in it, then leave. And then obviously spend 100% of your time on the startup or the idea or the business that you're starting. But it's a better idea to always like have some consistent income, or at least have a backup option like a rich father. that can be a good option as well. But you remember, you did the show with me where we had this entrepreneur come in, they're opening a facial, flash facial something. And I asked her this question, that she started her business in Dubai from scratch. And I asked her this question, that who is the best person to take money from when you're starting a business? She was like, family. So she took it from her father-in-law, her father, her husband, all of them contributed to her idea. And they're opening a shop in Dubai Hills Mall. December start is, I guess, the opening.
Do you know what it's called, Majid?
Flash Facial. So it's like a 15-minute facial. Ooh. She's like, you don't need to take out 1 hour or 2 hours. You can just walk in and you don't need appointments. There's machines and everything. You just come in, kiosk, book it and just go inside, have your facial in 15 minutes and just leave.
I will make sure to check that out.
When you talk to these people, the people who are already doing it, a lot of nice things. Like you told the stories of the people that you've talked to. It's a good learning curve from them, to be honest. So in the future, if you're thinking of it, you have good suggestions from a lot of people.
I do. And with that being said, thank you so much for watching, everyone. This is Smashy Business Show, a Smashy Business production, a part of the Augustus Media Podcast Network. Please do not forget to follow us on our newsletter on Beehive. We have Instagram, X, LinkedIn, and a WhatsApp channel. Make sure to tune in for tomorrow.